There's a blogger like me in every Wi-Fi cafe in America, I guess. I'm the guy who can get it for you. Forwarded emails, a bootlegged Bright Eyes album if you're partial, a pornographic video to celebrate 6 months of loneliness, damn near anything within reason. Yes, sir, I'm a regular Sears and Roebuck. So when Bat Segundo came to me in 2006 and asked me to smuggle a Dave Barry interview onto the internet for him, I told him no problem. And it wasn't.
Well, I mean, you know, we do have technology here in San Francisco, but we haven't quite got to the whole teleport thing.
The internet is here somewhere, isn't it? I keep hearing.
The internet, yeah.
It's around here somewhere. I keep looking for it.
If you dig up, you know, if you go walk into certain coffee houses, the internet will actually, you know, actually sneak up on you.
I know it's here. I just keep waiting for it to show up.
Well, I have to say this. First of all, the book is Money Secrets. Oh. And this may actually be the first and only book in the history of the written word that has a footnote with a picture of Susie Orman.
Yeah.
That was quite a distinction. In fact, there are many pictures of Susie Orman throughout this book.
Is that how you say it? Orman?
I'm not
Susie
sure.
Susie Orman?
I don't know. I don't watch TV. I've seen pictures of her.
I've heard many pronunciations. I think we should.
Orman? Orman?
I think Orman. I mean, I would say Orman. But,
okay.
But we'll say it whatever
you
want.
You would know more than me. But I mean.
I know. I don't really know.
Oh, okay.
I just have a lot of pictures of her in my book. But I don't really know anything.
Well, you could have also called this book, like, you know, I have more pictures of Susie Orman than in the Susie Orman book.
One of the selling points of the book is that if you're looking for a book with a lot of pictures of Susie Orman, this is your book. But it's not a Susie Orman book,
Yes, but it's actually a very sort of helpful guide along the way.
You really think so?
I mean, that
disturbs me so much that you would say that.
it disturbed me, but at the same time...
It helped you, huh?
It kind of helped me. Like, it was a sort of reference point for me. Like, oh, I'm finished with this paragraph.
Okay, that kind of helpful.
Yeah, it's
or the kind of helpful, like...
Kind of a,
man,
a weird dingbat, you know?
You would go like, oh my God, I would never do that. That kind of... So I, you know, whatever Dave is recommending here, I'm not stupid enough to do that. So I must be reasonably intelligent.
Well, we'll get the other celebrity out of the way too. Before we talk,
sure.
You know, before I actually ask,
look, can I explain why we have Susie Orman pictures in the? I should explain.
Oh yeah.
It was originally just a joke. I was, you know, looking. I was explaining, you know, how there are always these people on television telling you what to do with your money, and one of them is Susie Orman, is on all the time, every channel, all the time. It's an FCC regulation that Susie Orman must be on. At all times, somewhere on some channel. So
particularly during a PBS pledge drive.
Yeah. So that and so I just used her picture in there, but it just like struck me as so funny. She's just kind of grinning out at you. So I began to use her as the symbol of humor in the book. Mm-hmm. Whenever I said something really outrageously wacky, I would put Susie in there just to show how wacky it was. Because
she
is
a
wacky, wacky girl. That's Susie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other person you actually make fun of in this book is Donald Trump. Now, I'm not
sure.
But
in a deeply respectful way.
Yes, and I know you know. I wonder if you may have said that in light of recent news. Did you hear
Donald,
the lawsuit? Did you hear about this?
Yeah, he's not too insecure, is he? Some guy said he had a small net worth, you know.
Yeah.
Guys don't like to be told their net worth is not many. So he sued his guy for like $5
billion.
Dollars.
And that's $2.5 billion punitive damages.
Well, I don't care. I don't care. Let him sue me. I think I have a bigger net worth than Donald Trump, and I'm saying that right now. And I wouldn't be willing to submit to a doctor's examination to see who has the bigger net worth.
Okay.
I think it's me.
So you're brave enough to take Donald on.
Take him on. Head on.
Okay. Bring it on.
Speaking of heads, I do discuss his hair extensively in my book, which is...
Yes.
He said, I read a Donald Trump book in the research of this book called How to Get Rich.
Yes. It summarized it for the rest of us.
It summarized it.
Yeah.
It took me nearly an
Thank
hour,
you.
Hour
Thank
to
you.
Read. Thank you. You're welcome. Yeah, it took me about an hour to read, which... It's probably about twice as long as McDonald to write it because it's kind of a random kind of a book. It was kind of like, then I got a phone call from Paul Anka, you know, then I got a phone call from Regis Philbin. Donald's kind of letting you know how important he is a lot in this book, more so than actually telling you how to get rich. I guess he's telling you that if you get rich, you too could get a phone call from Paul Anka. And that's certainly something we're all, you know, going to strive for. I have no doubt, but. I can't remember even what I was
I don't know. I mean, I've never received a phone call from Paul Anka.
I wasn't really sure Paul Anka was still alive.
You haven't either.
No, I haven't.
I'm wondering if it actually really might actually sort of shift your mood or somehow adjust your net worth in some
way. I'd say,
way.
Paul, right now I'm kind of busy. Can you call later?
Yeah.
You know. Or I'd say, how'd you get this number, Paul Anka?
Maybe the call from Paul
I'm
Anka.
Ready. I mean, I've got lines ready for when Paul Anka does call. You
know? What if the call from Paul Anka serves as sort of a surrogate for like a daily affirmation for Donald? I don't know. Instead of staring at himself in the mirror, you know, and saying, I'm Donald Trump.
He can, yeah.
he actually needs the call from Paul Anka.
And Regis, yeah, that's true.
And Regis, too.
And then the reminder of how big his net. Oh, Donald, your net worth is so big.
Regis, do you think Paul Anka's a lifeline? I don't know. well, actually, there seems to be actually a lot of money books coming out in January. The other high-profile title, and actually I'm going to be speaking with her too, is Liz Pearl's Money, a Memoir. What does your book have that Pearl's book does not have?
Okay, I can actually answer that question. Okay. My book has many. You're right. There are thousands and thousands.
There's no index either. I was shocked.
No, because it doesn't matter. You can just pick any page at random, and it'll be just as useful as any other
page.
Really?
Because every sort of self-help money book has an index. I was a little perturbed.
You can use somebody else's index for my book.
I could.
Because it really doesn't matter what page you turn to.
The page numbers line up. Okay.
It'll be equally helpful, I guess, in the sense that if you want information on, let's say, tax-free annuities, it really doesn't matter which page in my book you turn to. There won't be anything there about tax-free annuities. I don't even know what they are. I was going to say why my book is better than all the other money, or why it's different, where it stands out.
What's the hook here?
The hook. Okay. All the other ones, and I've read them all.
Yes.
They all have one big flaw, which is I'm not getting any of the royalties from them. So
I see.
Where I'm going? So it's pretty important to me that people buy my book.
Well, I also know that you were paid.
And not these other people.
We should point out that you were actually paid $127,000 by Slashdot for an interview, too. This is what you claimed on Slashdot. So I think that there's some various...
You're paying me a huge amount of money for this interview.
Well, we don't talk about that. Yeah.
I have
my
a gigantic
today
appearance fee.
Yeah.
That's why my net worth is so much bigger than Donald Trump's.
There was an ad, actually, on the Miami Herald site for the National Speakers Bureau, where you actually apparently were offering, you could pay to have you come for breakfast. I was wondering how many appearances you made for this. It seems like you're making a lot of lucre here.
I'll do anything. Basically anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how many appearances
have you
made?
I will have sex with a duck for the right.
Really?
I haven't done it yet, but
a small duck or a big duck?
a guy like me goes for a big duck, but it's...
not a lame duck, though.
I wouldn't actually have sex with a duck, but they would. It's quite possible that it's somewhere on my book tour. It's going to say I'm supposed to. The way it's been going, Dave. This in Cincinnati, we it's a little different, but we really think it could help the book. That's how they always say whenever they want you to do something that you really don't want to do. They always say it would really help the book, Dave, if you would have sex with this duck in Cincinnati. It'd be great for the book, great exposure.
And actually, I think it would help the people of Cincinnati. I mean, here, people in this town, I have sex with a duck all the time. Yeah. So I'm kind of inured to that. I'm really not impressed, Dave.
Well, that's true. I guess it's no biggie here.
Yeah.
Probably duck sex goes on all over the streets of San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, you have no idea. Like the tribe.net. Duck sex tribes there. Yeah, exactly.
So you're really, it's no big. I mean, I'm not even shocking you a little bit.
No, not at all.
All right.
Although you did shock me with the checking account balance I checked before I actually.
See, when you found out what my fee for appearing
that
on this show.
Me, yeah, I had to contact.
You're paying Slashdot money, Mister.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Yes. I knew I should have. Okay. I wanted to actually get into the book, and you really...
Wait a minute. You want to actually talk?
I do, actually. Believe it or not, I have questions pertaining to the book.
Okay.
Can you believe it?
Okay.
But you rail against the boomerang generation.
I do. Are you in that generation? You look like you are to me.
You know, I never actually...
You look like a boomeranger.
Actually, I
with your short haircut and your t-shirt, Mr.
You're just saying that because, guys like me who are prematurely balding need these sort of short crop.
Is that how
how it is. So we sort of disguise that. But I know in your case, it was a particularly traumatic sort of upbringing that you describe in the book of these sort of shears, which...
Oh, yeah. My dad used to cut my hair. Kind of the same hairstyle you've got now. It's kind of like the tennis ball. Eminem, tennis balls. And that's what I had. But when I was a kid in like 1960, that really wasn't a good look. That wasn't the look you wanted.
But it's a good look now.
Now it is. But it was 19. We didn't know that. I couldn't go to junior high school, Harold Secret in junior high school,
pre-George
and say,
Clooney,
I know you guys all want to hold me upside down over the toilet now because of the way my hair looks. But trust me, in 45 years, this is going to be so cool. I couldn't do that because I didn't really know it back then.
Well, I mean, but seriously, about the boomerang generation, in light of the fact that, for example, wages have not exactly sort of...
Oh, you're going to say it's okay to move back in with mom and dad.
Well, I'm not saying it's necessarily
entirely... Yeah, I'm just
going to
say, it's not okay to move back in with your mom and dad. It's not okay. There's no excuse.
No excuses. Okay.
Well, it's wrong.
Yeah,
no, that's, I realize that actually there are moms and dads who enable it, but it's wrong. It shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be allowed. It's against nature. It's like, as I say in the book, it's like if the kangaroo comes out of the pouch, grows to be a big grown-up kangaroo, goes to Princeton, and then comes home and climbs back into its mom's pouch. Does that sound natural to you boomerangers out there?
No.
I didn't think so.
Well, I'm not a boomeranger, though.
No, you're not. Okay, you're denying boomerangers.
I'm playing the devil's advocate here.
Well, if any of them are listening.
I do have friends who are boomerangers, though.
Okay, well, I'm telling them now, move out.
Okay.
Your mom and dad want you to move out. That's why I advocate actually the witness protection program for parents. You send your child off to senior year. You know, he comes home for like Christmas vacation and knocks on the door and like complete strangers answer the door.
Yeah.
Say, we don't know anybody by that. And your parents are like gone. They're in Arizona now under different names altogether. You'll never track them down. Boomerangers. That's what it's going to come to. You wait.
Okay. Well, actually, I wanted to get into another issue, which was last Sunday, your book was actually reviewed in the New York Times Book Review by a man named Neil Genslinger.
This book got reviewed three times by the New York Times.
It's
been ridiculous. I never got reviewed, you know.
Well, this one was very, very strange because...
Yeah, I know. Well, he really wasn't reviewing my book. He was really reviewing another book and kind of using my book to make fun of it,
which was
okay.
But it was weird. He used like Lee Eisenberg, and Lee Eisenberg was the guy who coined the term power lunch.
Yes.
You know, and I was like, what's this book being doing, you know, dumped in with Barry's book? I was reading this.
I don't know.
And then the weird thing, though, was that like there were, you know, there was the sentence, but there are still plenty of opportunities for laughing out loud. And I was reading this going... What is this? Some sort of like supper club? I mean, are you like giving permission to your manservant to sort of laugh at Dave Barry's jokes? I mean, does this sort of faze you or bother you in any way? Like,
no.
There's this weird kind of. I was discussing this with a friend, and I hate to ramble about this, but I really do want to talk about
this.
That's
okay. I can take off. When you're done with the question, give me an idea, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I'll be back.
I do have a tendency to talk like this.
I'm just giving you a hard time, Ed.
But I guess what I'm trying to say.
Ed, shut up. Ed. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your question.
Okay. Though, I mean,
does the word Joe Biden ring a bell?
I wanted to say very quickly.
Yes,
that
go ahead.
Okay, 30 seconds or less.
You were talking with a friend.
So this whole kind of like, there's this weird kind of elitism at the polls with regard to your work. Now, I grew up in Sacramento, and like I read all your columns growing up and everything. And people who I know who've come to the city have read your columns in their particular sort of areas. But like, you're not in the Chronicle. You're not in the LA Times. I mean, has this bothered you in any way? Or I mean, how do you deal with this? I mean, it's kind of snobby, I think. You know?
No, I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, it's. I've done fine. I've had lots and lots of newspapers carry my column. Very, very rare is the columns because in every newspaper. Some do, some don't. But no, it doesn't. It doesn't really bother me. I'm trying to think of an analogy. None is coming to mind. It's just, you know, it's music. You know, there are. To me, humor is a lot like music, and there's certain kinds of humor that certain people like and certain kinds that don't like. And it doesn't mean it's bad or good or whatever.
Yeah.
And I realize that my kind of humor, you know, it tends to appeal to immature people like you and me and not necessarily the people that the New York Times thinks it's trying to reach anyway. So,
but at the same time,
I'm okay with that.
Well, at the same time,
I'm not bitter. Well, I'm not bitter. I've got, you know,
at least you got coverage. The thing is,
the first review in the New York Times was by Janet Maslin, who's a real literary.
Yeah.
And she wrote this wonderful review.
Huh.
And I was stunned that she even would, you know, read a book by me, let alone review it nicely. But she did. So this guy, that review, I found it kind of entertaining in a way, just because he was kind of using me to get, you know, score points against Lee Eisenberg. Which was okay. Yeah. Also, I suppose. Lee Eisenberg probably wasn't happy with it.
It was a very strange review.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, going back to this issue of immaturity, I don't think it's necessarily...
You don't feel defensive about that.
No, I'm happily immature.
Good,
Yes, and mature in other ways. Immature. I mean, prolonged maturity as much as possible.
Okay.
For example, where was I going with this?
I don't know. It's hard to tell with a lot of your questions, Ed, what really you're...
You're not the only person who's complained about this.
I kind of like it because it's less work for the interviewee. You know what I mean? Like, if you ask me short... Like, if you say stuff like, Dave... How long does it take you to write a column? Or Dave, what is your
I don't want to ask you typical questions.
If you ask questions like that, then I have to talk for like 5 minutes. But this way, you talk like 5 minutes, and I'm sitting here, I can like, you know, thinking, what else do I have to do today? You know, like, it's good. It's a very relaxing thing. And then your voice changes a little. I think, he's getting near asking a question now. I'm going to start focusing in on him. And then I start to hear a thought form. And then out comes the question, and I, you know, there I'm ready. But I've had that kind of little mini vacation on the book tour.
That's good. I'm glad I could empower you with that.
It's really different on the Today Show, where like it's like Katie Couric asks a real short question, and you have to think, oh my God, I have to have a funny answer right now on national television. You know.
Well, this is a podcast.
Is much more that, relaxing.
This is what
podcast. True, yeah. Our potential audience is trillions. Yeah, well, in the bazillions, if they can get like.
We can go on for 3 hours if you like.
Or they can get podcasts on other planets, right? Yeah, exactly. It could go into space. And so like even other species other could get this podcast. What is a podcast anyway? Well, I've been doing them lately.
So have you done a podcast before?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so podcasting, I know that your technology befuddles you to some degree.
Not too much. Like you put it on the internet there, and then somebody downloads it into his or her iPod.
Well, what happened?
Or that's just a generic term for an
That's sort of what it is. Okay, it's basically if I type in like for example, if I go into iTunes after this is done, you type in Dave Barry into iTunes, this particular podcast will actually pop up,
and then people just like
and people can download it and like listen. They will dump to their computer and it will go directly to their
iPod. They will
iPod.
What to their computer?
It will go immediately to their computer automatically, and then it will actually go to their iPod, which may or may be hooked. Like you know, it's great for sort of you know commuting. So people are listening to this.
They're
stuff.
Listening on the train and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Hey there, train riders.
Yes, subway riders.
Hey there.
If you're stuck in traffic.
Don't feel like a loser just because you're on a train and we're like relaxing here in San Francisco, babbling like morons. This is our job. Your job is to go to work.
Do you have a word for someone who is caught in rush hour right now?
Hey there. I used to be one of those people. So long time I used to ride the subway in New York City. We didn't have iPods. By God, we didn't have anything. We didn't have electricity then in those days. Yeah. So. We had to read books on the train. It was horrible. People would fart. Do they still do that on the train?
I actually read books and
I thought you were going to say I actually fart.
I have been known to slip every now and then. I'm not ashamed.
Okay.
Going back to this issue of humor.
Yeah.
You were talking about it. We were classifying it as immature, but
yeah. Know, well, I mean, you know, like I'm more like I'm not Mr. Cerebral. Like I'll. Extend some literary conceit over 9 pages so at the end you go, ha, that was clever. That's not really my... I mean, I want you to like giggle on the first, you know, by the end of the first sentence. That's because I'm really insecure when I'm writing humor. So I don't, you know, I can't rise to literary levels of humor. I'm more like the kid who's in the back of the you know, the classroom going, you know, at just the right moment when the teacher bends over. That's me. That's my humor.
But at the same time, it is insightful to some
degree. Extremely, because if you go at the wrong time, it's not funny.
No, but
to do it just the timing is critical.
Pointing out, for example, the idiocy of engineers and the exploding whale. I mean, that to me is a very insightful thing to point out.
Well, but really, how hard is that to point out?
Well, you'd be surprised. But the thing is you have a way of pointing these things out in a very sort of clear manner, which of us, like, you know, language freaks are like, oh, well, you know.
I argue that is the essence of it. If good humor is not really thinking of anything new so much as seeing something clearly that everyone already knows, that's when people really laugh. When you say something that's completely true, not something weird, but that they think is totally true, but they never really would have said it quite that way. That's when they laugh the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
That and when whales are exploded.
Okay. Yes. Well, that's very true. Now you've also stopped your column.
I have.
For good.
Have.
I will write no more. You know, it's being Dave Barry here.
Well, actually, I write. I do write a couple things. I wrote a year in review, which I wrote again this year, and a holiday gift guide. And I wrote a few columns about the hurricanes for the Miami Herald. And I'll probably still occasionally write, but I won't ever produce a regular weekly syndicated humor column.
I was curious though, when you initially sort of, did you have to go check into sort of like a columnist Betty Ford clinic initially or anything?
No.
Did you have like withdrawal like after?
No.
My God, I'm supposed to write a column.
You know, that's kind of like, this is not actually probably the best analogy to use right now, and I hope it doesn't sound insensitive, but it's kind of like if you were a coal miner for 40 years and you finally retired. I don't think you wake up and go, my God, geez, I really want to go mine some coal. It's really not that hard to give up.
Yeah.
For one thing, I'm still writing. I'm writing books and that's writing. You know, I still sit down in front of my computer and write and try to be funny and so on. I just don't have that weekly deadline, which and it doesn't have to be in that one format. So if I think I want to write something funny and it's only one sentence, I can put it on my blog.
Yeah.
Or if I'm working on a book, I can try to write funny in my book. So it's just a little more relaxed, a little less deadline-y. Mm-hmm. Not dealing with 500 newspapers anymore. I'm just dealing with one editor. So that's a lot more relaxing.
Do you think you'll be experimenting more, or have you been experimenting
more? You mean like
more?
With drugs? No, I did that. I'm done with that.
Well, like for example, like near the end of your sort of run on the column, you wrote two very sort of serious columns about September 11th. One, the day after, which we were all stunned by. But you also wrote the Hallowed Ground column. And these are columns that sort of suggest, there's another kind of Dave Barry. Have you been interested in sort of exploring things along those lines? Or?
Well, I wrote some serious columns over the years. Those were two and a couple of others. But not really. I mean, more exploring for me is fiction, which I kind of like. I did a couple of novels, and Ridley Pearson, who's a bandmate of mine, he and I wrote a children's book. Which we loved. We had more fun doing that, and we decided to do another one, which we're just finished with, and stuff like that. There's just like different feel to it and different audience maybe, but fun, you know, just kind of rewarding for me.
Do you set any sort of conscious limits about what you're going to write about? Things that you will never write about?
No.
Are you interested in sort of like, you know, getting into sort of the territory like David Sedaris or Jonathan Ames or, you know, exploring sort of like, you know, well, you
like
know,
really personal.
Now that you're totally retired, you can sort of push the envelope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you thought about that or anything?
Well, I mean, I have somewhat in the sense that when I wrote two novels and they have what they call adult language. In fact, I got a lot of grief from some of my.
You can say anything you want. It was a podcast. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the F word, you know, and some of the people who F word is ferret. Yeah. Some of the people who read my column, read the book and say, I can't believe you use this language. So the second time I did it, I wrote another novel, and at the beginning, I wrote like a 2-page warning with increasingly large font saying, if you don't want to read dirty words, please don't read this. Please don't read the book. It's not a, you know, it's not a kid's book. It's not a humor column. I still got mail from people. I read your warning, but I still read the book and I was appalled, Mr. Barry. By the way, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I really don't know.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I guess that's what I just,
but I mean, to answer your question.
Yeah.
So I sort of have already kind of, you know, not been Mr. Squeaky clean newspaper humor dude.
Getting your David Mamet out.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't feel this great. I don't like, you know, I don't really have any serious thoughts, so I don't really have to, I don't feel this need to explore any deep, you know, scary subconscious, I don't have to feel I needed to plumb my psyche. I don't know that I even have one.
Well, you mentioned in the two September 11th essays.
Excuse me, one second.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, kids. Bat Segundo here. Pardon the interruption, but a few things must be said. At this point, Mr. Barry's attention was diverted by a print journalist. The journalist knew shorthand. Our young roving correspondent, who did not go to journalism school, much less a culinary academy, did not. The print journalist, whose first name we will bleep out for the protection of all parties, proceeded to circle the two gentlemen before a tragic and wholly unexpected technical error, which will follow in a few minutes. The print journalist would later write a column about this podcast, claiming that blogs and podcasts were, in the year of our Lord 2006, I quote, the next big thing. We'll let our listeners take in that statement, but we will note that there is no correct way to use this podcast. Anyway, back to the interview.
Hey. I'm Dave.
Hi.
We're doing a
Are you podcasting?
Yes, we are.
Let me just stand your way.
Okay.
Okay. So,
Can you edit that, or we just want to leave that in? Yes. Checking in.
Okay. Okay. Let's see where we are.
He's a crack dealer here in San Francisco, and he's here for me.
Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you about the giving up your column was, so do you think that you're going to become some sort of Bill Watterson type? You're going to hole up in like some sort of small town, never give interviews again?
No, no.
I was wondering about this.
No, first of all, no. I never minded people that much. I just get tired of writing a column.
Okay.
I don't have any fear of being interviewed.
Okay.
See?
That's very, very true. Well, I also want to ask, speaking of cartoonists, you know, do you miss collaborating with a cartoonist? You actually collaborated with the late, great Jeff McNally.
Yeah. And that was so wonderful. It was like, it was the best thing for me mm-hmm. working with that guy, because he was a genius. Mm-hmm. And there were a few times when I really didn't have the column done, but he had to get his thing in, and I would like call him up and go, Jeff, dogs. Like, you know, that's about all I had, you know. And he would laugh. He had this big laugh. He'd go, okay, Dave, I got it. And he'd write, you know, just brilliant cartoon. I often thought his cartoons were funnier than my columns. So it was so much fun working with him. That was a very spoiling experience. He was just great.
Yes, it's true. At the exact same hotel, at the exact same table in which our battery expired when we talked with T.C. Boyle, our fully charged battery went kaput again. Truly, we are maroons. And the print journalist flashed us a smile of triumph, but Dave Berry, being Dave Berry, was kind enough to offer us these final thoughts.
So I ran out of battery, and oh, I see that Dave...
While your little machine ran out of batteries, in came a print reporter. Yes.
I have a pen here, Ed.
Actually, there's a pen right here.
Oh, your pen is out of battery.
Actually, I would like to say I have podcasted, so I'm not a complete idiot.
Almost. But have you wait a minute. Those two statements don't logically follow.
All right.
Thanks very much.
It's been really great. I think we accomplished a lot and helped a lot of people. And so. Thanks for... How many questions total do you think I answered in this?
I think maybe seven or eight.
Seven or eight. Okay, thanks.
However many asides there were.
Like I was saying, there's a blogger like me in every city in America. We may not be as professional as those big city print reporters. We may have strange speaking styles. Our batteries might die. But there's one thing I can say with absolute certainty. I have podcasted, and I am a complete idiot.